why we're all working so hard. You know, you guys are successful. You know, you've got several businesses. You've got a great profile. Why are we all not sitting down quietly having a cup of tea celebrating how easy it is? You know, why are you working so hard?
I have done it a couple of times. Nearly didn't make the first one due to nearly passing out backstage. Oh, God, that was horrible.
I think one of the problems I had, looking back, was the fact I was 21. I had to go and sign my lease with my mum.
Responsible adult with you.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there. I'm Anthony Laban. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm here at Fellas in Kingly Street. I keep saying Carnaby, Kingly Street, with Bobby Gordon. Thank you very much, Bobby. And obviously with Ian Harold. Welcome, Ian. Thank you very much for coming down.
Thanks for having me.
And yeah, I just wanted to have a bit of a chat about why we're all working so hard. You know, you guys are successful. You've got great businesses. You've got several businesses. You've got a great profile. Why are we all not sitting down quietly having a cup of tea celebrating how easy it is? You know, why are you working so hard? And I think that's the bit that I think is really interesting to me. So, Bobby, you've just won business leader.
Indeed.
Just last year's business leader. What made you, you're entering competitions, you made yourself fill out a Modern Barber application form, you left yourself open to that competition and put yourself in there, and, you know, congratulations, you won it.
Thank you very much.
But, you know, 20-odd years of working and you're still throwing your hat in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, entering them competitions, when I done it like the year before I won, for me it was just a good way of like looking back at what has happened over that year, because I think sometimes as a business owner, like, you forget to give yourself a bit of praise and look back at exactly what you've done and achieved. And yeah, just done that first year and I was like, oh, actually, like, it's not all bad. I've done all right, actually. Yeah, yeah. And just entered, and yeah, I didn't win that first year, but then I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to do this now every year, because it's a nice way to reflect on what's happened with the team, with the business, see where we're at. It makes me do it. You know, it's all very well saying, oh, I'm going to do that, but like, you had to, you know, you had the deadline, so you had to do it. And yeah, I was very shocked when I won, but yeah, it was nice just to sort of look back.
Yeah, it's interesting to stop and give yourself a bit of credit for what you've been up to. And mate, you're still working as hard as ever, aren't you?
Well, now I'm back to working 6 days a week. I'm working 6 days a week and he's working two. So yeah, I think, why do I do it? I think it's just what I've always done and it's habitual, but I think I have a great job in the fact that I love every aspect of what I do. So from teaching the next generation of apprentices to cutting hair behind my chair, to then, you know, working at stage events and hair shows and teaching for American Crew. I think if I was just pocketed in a barbershop, stood behind the chair all day, I don't know if I'd have stuck at it as long as I have.
Right.
I think it's when somebody says to me, oh, well, when are you going to give that up? I'm like, well, that's what I do. It's not a case of me giving that element up. This is the career I've built because this is the barber I wanted to become. And now I think that I'm at a point where I've got a lot of knowledge from whether it's business, apprenticeship training, whatever the dynamic is, to even standing behind the chair and dealing with people. Surely it's now more about planting trees that you never sit under the shade of.
Yeah, yeah. No, good shout.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I agree, mate. That's it. I think, like, me personally, same. It's like I enjoy all aspects of it. I like to see people grow within as well the business. It's been like a real good pleasure of mine to give people a chance and stuff that wasn't really available, like we was talking about before coming on here. Like, it wasn't, I don't think that was a thing back when I started. there was no training courses. We were saying, that's where I met Ian, like the first time doing American Crew course back in whenever it was, late 90s, early 2000s. That wasn't available. So it's nice, like the guys that work for me now, they have all these things available to them, you know. It's yeah, that's what I like.
I think, and your apprentice system still works. It's still running. You got, yeah, you're producing great people.
I think in 29 years, I've now only actually employed, I think I worked out, it's six people in 29 years are the only six that I ever employed that I've never trained.
Wow.
And everyone since, and I didn't take six on at once. I've had one person every now and again over that time that's been an addition and hasn't really stayed very long. But every single one of them has come to me at 16, other than those six, and they've worked through their apprenticeship. They've built columns. Some of them have gone on to have their own businesses. Some of them have traveled. Some of them have come down here and worked down here. Not one of them has ever had a problem getting a job. And that's still continuing. And I think when you talk to people and they say, how do you get apprenticeship or how do you get apprentices? My thing is, I've never done anything other than put an advert in the shop window, because we've trained that many now that in the local area, it might be, let's say, Bobby's one of our clients and you're his pal in the boozer and your son or daughter doesn't quite know what they want to do. And Bobby says, well, Ian's looked after kids around here for you. Why don't you just see if that's something that they fancy doing? And that's generally how all my teams evolved. And some of them have even been our clients. Like young Sam that will be at Barber Connect. Sam has had his hair cut with us since he was about two or three.
Wow.
And then he's ended up coming to work for me. And when he was 15, as a Saturday guy. And then he's just evolved.
Yeah,
and Sam's doing brilliant.
That's really
a lovely accolade, though, isn't it? Do you train?
Yeah, we've had, like, not as many as Ian, but, yeah, a good four or five, like, come through. So, you know, Sam, another Sam.
Yeah.
Like, he was my first apprentice, and, like, he's now managing my shop in Canterbury and been with us over 10 years now, like, really loyal guy. But yeah, all the guys, we do our own sort of in-house training and just try and get the best out of people. And like my plan is, wasn't to begin with, but it has, as the brand's got bigger, is to sort of give people a chance to grow within, like, Fella, you know. It's not necessarily about like leaving and opening your own shop. If I could, you know, like Alex, who is now like a partner in the shop in Soho. Like, he worked for me in Canterbury, managed Folkestone, and I didn't want to lose him. We got on really well. And yeah, I just wanted to give them an opportunity to become part of what, you know, what I've tried to try to grow.
But that's really interesting though. You're saying that, how have you found the kind of circumstances and just kind of having a business for as long as you guys have has changed you? You know, what's the experience brought to the table? Because obviously you've ended up now with three stores, one with a partner, you know, with the kind of intention that at some point there'll be more. You've got two now.
I did have three, but we lost one in COVID because Arcadia went bust. We had a concession in Topman, and our concessionary store was doing brilliant, but unfortunately Topman Arcadia went and we lost it. And we've never, at this point, we haven't gone back to having another store. But then we had fallout of staff. And again, going back to the fact that I only like to build my own team literally from nothing, it's very difficult then when we've had three shops, then we scale the team back because we've unfortunately made a couple redundant, some left. Then to build that up to get me ready to, we're going to open another site and eat the team behind it, then that's what slows me down a little. And in some respect, it's been good because it stopped me then needing to go and borrow money to go and open a shop. I haven't wanted, I always wanted 10. I've got to 3 twice, and then I've never really built beyond that through circumstance. But I've always had the team that we've kind of expanded when we've got too big for the stores we're in. So, like, potentially now, Archie's our apprentice in Attitude. Once Archie's cutting hair, we're probably at a point where when we take our next apprentice on, I'm already thinking, let's maybe start looking for shop number 3 again, because we're now then going to have an apprentice where we don't have a chair for him. So a bit like Bobby, if I'm going to train you, I want to keep you within the business. Mm. So let's try and expand the business rather than one of the guys looking at leaving to set the...
Swap a chair over. And, I mean, I think that factor of, you know, I speak to a lot of guys that are starting out who've kind of a shop, very successful, pumping it out. They found their kind of, they found their tribe. They found what they're doing is pumping.
Yeah.
And immediately the conversation, like within 10 minutes, will turn into them wanting to do franchise and wanting to expand and wanting to grow and kind of maximize the brand when it's really a store. Do you know what I mean? Which is nothing wrong with that. I think, you know, I started with a store. We've all started with a store.
Yeah.
But I think the emphasis now is so much on brand that urge to kind of run into a big chain. I think it's really, really interesting that you know, even with your experience, that you'd gone to 3 and, you know, for circumstances, retreated back to 2 and still thinking about how we do it, but doing it with that kind of calculation in mind. Obviously, you were saying about this one here that you'd gone off and set up Canterbury and Folkestone.
Yeah.
And then so to come back into the kind of, you know, the lion's den of Soho.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a full. Wouldn't have been the plan. But
no.
Yeah, the reasons behind it.
And that's kind of like with me, you know, to be honest, like when I set that first shop up in Canterbury, there was no like vision, you know, in 20 years, I'm going to have this, that, and the other. I'd moved to a place I didn't know a soul and I needed to get something going. I need to pay for a mortgage. I had 2 kids and blah, blah, blah. And it was an opportunity. Like I found a shop, the price was right. I'd sold a flat in London, so I had a bit of money left over to open that. Didn't know Canterbury at all, other than I knew it was a student town. And, you know, I knew I could cut hair. I was a bit different to what I was just basically taking a little bit of what I'd done like in Soho to the suburbs and such.
Did it work the other way around?
It was
bringing the suburbs back to London.
It's a bit like that. But there was, opened this shop. It was myself. Like, it was kind of just before the whole barber sort of boom, I guess. I was quite lucky with the timings. I mean, I remember like the first few days people thought this guy doesn't know what he's doing because I was taking time cutting hair, which wasn't such a thing in a lot of the local barber shops, but we managed to get a good reputation. And then just started to pick off like some of the best barbers in that area, really, that started to work for us. And then we got apprentice. And then even like the second shop, the Folkestone one, that was another opportunity that landed on my lap. It's like an up and coming coastal town where they wanted to get some cool things going on. And I got approached, you know, would you be interested in opening a barber shop in this one particular area? Which never actually materialised, end up in a shop a little bit up the road. But like, that's kind of how that come about.
Yeah.
And then this one was where I worked for 10 years when I was a kid and the previous owner was retiring. So it's kind of, for me, it's happened organically, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, but now, like, you know, I feel much more confident in like knowing business. I think that's the thing I was going to say, you know, it's all very well opening shops, but you do need to learn about running a business, whether it's a barber shop, a coffee shop, or whatever it is. You know, I think that's, you know, if I could rewind the clock, like I would have liked to have had a bit more of that knowledge in the early days.
But at the beginning, it wasn't. You're absolutely right. When it's, you know, when you start and set, when you started, you know, you opened up your traditional, at what, 1990?
1996, I was 21.
Just showing my research really kicks in, doesn't it? But, you know, you opened up then, and I opened my first place up in 91. There was no support. I mean, I started wandering up and talking to other shopkeepers that had been there longer and getting my little network together. I've always been quite keen to reach out and ask for help when I haven't got a clue what I'm doing. And I think now you go into it with much more idea. You know, guys open. I think if I was opening up now, and the guys opening up there have much more resource. Whether you're taking that resource on.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems I had looking back was the fact I was 21. So it seems then nobody at 21 was doing that kind of thing. Like, I had to go and sign my lease with my mum because
the responsible adult with you.
Yeah, I couldn't spell your name.
The lawyer basically was like, you know, I'm a bit weary of doing this with someone so young signing that kind of check with that kind of deposit and so on and so forth. So then, and that was one of the things that started me on the apprenticeship route, really early, was one of the first members of staff that I took on was 40. And in his interview and everything, he was kind of fine. And then 2 days in, his work wasn't really up to much. Mm. And I could see this lady whose son's hair had cut for a long time. She was sitting there really uncomfortable. So I ended up finishing the haircut. We ended up having a chat, come argument afterwards. And he was like, my son's younger, you know, I've got a son that's your age. And I was like, all right, okay, fair enough. And he kind of stormed out. And that then was the first time I realized age was going to be a problem. So from that then forward, I was like, my team needs to be younger than me. So at 21, where'd you go for a younger team?
How did you come about getting a shop at 21 then? What was behind that?
Well, I had a really funny experience. So I worked for a family business, and by chance, I served my time in one shop, and then my boss was the son of, well, he basically took over the family business as his dad retired, and he took over his father's shop. And I ended up working in his father's shop, and then I ended up running the barbers just purely by chance by the time I was only 19. And then I fell out with him. I can't tell you what over, probably something really insignificant and stupid. But I drove past where Traditions Barbershop is, and I was like, why not? Mm. And I'd gone home and I was like, I'm looking for another job. And my mum had sat me down, and she's always been kind of my voice of reason, if you like. And she was like, well, you left to your own devices. You run a shop. If you go and work anywhere else, you're going to stand next to your boss. You've had 18 months on your own. So I was like, there's one around the corner. I'm going to open it. She's like, well, how are you going to do that? And sure enough, with all the
blind youthful arrogance.
Yes, that's definitely the phrase.
Yeah, but amazing. I mean, my first one was, I was 22 when I opened our first one up, and it was very much accidental. But did you find and from your point of view, did you find mentors? Did you find people
respected people that I've worked for and taken little bits of what I like and don't like from how they've like managed me, I guess. And you know, not just people in barbering, you know, like friends that work in business, and you know, yeah, just taking advice from other people, but no one in particular, like within the industry. I'd probably say Ian was like for me someone I could look at.
I definitely think, from my perspective, initially, I think that was one of the reasons why I ended up with the brand I work with the way I do, because the guy that used to was the licensed distributor at the time. He was very worldly wise in hairdressing and men's hair. I remember one day he coming to the shop, and at the time, I not long took the brand on. And at the time, we were only charging £3.50 for a haircut. So he used to walk into my barber's. We had 10 papers. We had GQ, all the men's clean mags, fresh coffee, water machine. And he was like, what are you doing here? There's only me working here. I want people to be comfortable while they're waiting. And he was like, well, look at how much you're charging. What do you mean? He said, well, I'll tell you now. As soon as you get someone that's going to work in that chair over there, when you drop dead charging £3 for an haircut while you're paying for all this, he'll just step over you and sit in that chair. And that was probably the first person that indirectly used to kind of probe me a little bit, yeah, and get me to think about what I was doing. Because nobody in my family are hairdressers. I'm a hairdresser or a barber just sheerly by total freak accident. And nobody in my family has ever run their own business. So there was nobody really to bounce off. And then as I've grown up within my industry, I think I've found people, I've got friends like Bobby, I can bounce things off, I can ask. But it's took me probably, I'd definitely say the first 15 years, I was like, okay, let's just see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Same.
How did you guys come together? How did you bump into each other?
I took I met Ian at Salon International when it used to be at Wembley.
Yeah.
It was there. So it was whenever that was. And
I reckon that was about 97, 98.
Yeah. And it was the first time I'd ever seen, like, you know, like men's hairdressing done how, you know, because I come from a hairdressing background, but was never really taught like a men's barbering or whatever. But I remember just watching Ian and I can't even remember the other guy's name, but just went from there. And then they gave me a leaflet. It was about a course and I was like, definitely gonna do that. And yeah, just from there. And as soon as I'd done that course, it just changed my career as such. Someone had like finally told me how to get shape and cut proper men's hair, and yeah, just went from there. But probably 20 years now, is it?
Good 20 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really nice. So we were just chatting the other week in one of these about, you know, reaching out, getting involved and talking, and how many barbers actually do have that kind of group of mates in the industry that they kind of shout out to, or just sit and have a beer and brainstorm a problem away.
Yeah, it's nice now. And obviously it's a lot easier now because of social media and the way you can connect. But yeah, there was none of that, was there, back then?
We used to send the old carrier pigeon. and I think, rightly or wrongly, I think one of the great things about Bobby and me is we're not necessarily ever going to take each other's clients. We were building a friendship in and around an industry, and we were bouncing things off each other, which was okay, because now everybody seems very vocal, and I've heard you talk about it with other people. 25 years ago, you'd be having straighteners with the barber around the corner. You wouldn't be turning around and telling him, can I go and borrow, you know, a bag of coffee off him or something? Whereas because we had that distance, we were very competitive within our own environments, but we were able to come together at like Salon International or Spring Salon that was then in Manchester or small. I mean, Barber Connect's only been around for about 10 years, but we were able to connect, whether it was on an educational class or and talk things through without necessarily upsetting one another's business.
I think that
as our environment has grown as an industry, that sort of melting pot of animosity between each other, I mean, don't mean between us.
No,
I mean,
but in the industry itself,
seems to be diluting a little.
Definitely.
And people, and I don't know whether that's because of issues that the industry has that has brought a togetherness, or whether we're just educating ourselves more, that the more highly educated you are at something, definitely the more you can share and the more you want to give. I don't know whether there's an element of that.
I mean, there does seem to be a kind of confidence in the barbering industry now over certainly the last 10, 15 years that wasn't there before. You know, previously it was protective, you know, very much knives out and that was it. Yeah, you know, your business has essentially been the last 15 years-ish.
Yeah,
you swapped over is the wrong word, but you added attitude.
So
when was that?
So I added attitude when, funny enough, again, go back to said brand, unfortunately. So I wanted to become an educator for this brand. And at the time, I was in, I think, a £5 barbershop at that point. and I'd done all the heats, I'd got myself.
But back then, was £5 a decent barbershop? You've got to get a bit lost because a fiver sounds like a proper dodgy. Whereas in 2000, a fiver haircut was a fair bit of money.
Well, as I say, you know, we had fresh coffee, we had 10 papers, we had comics for kids, we had. So just to open our door every day probably used to cost nearly £50 for all the things that we had people to help themselves to. So we were probably a little cheap, but we weren't the cheapest. Mm. Like you could go and get your haircut around the corner for £2.50. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So, but we did work on volume and scale. So at that time, the area that my shop's in is largely owned by Greek families and Jewish families. So the shops never, ever become up for sale. They just get passed down through the family networks. So on the other side of the road was the local butcher shop. And the butcher had known my mum since before I was born. And his family are all over the world. So they've got no desire for his building. So he said to me, listen, if you want to come and sign a long lease with me, once that lease runs out and matures, I'll sell you the building. So I'm in the process of moving Traditions Barbershop three doors down and onto the other side of the road. When Paul says to me, the educators from the States want you to be our man, but I can't really put you on stage at flagship events and you talk about technique and you talk about skill level and then you say you're £3.50 or £5 for a haircut. I was like, well, as it happens, I said, I'm just about to open a men's salon. I said, I've got this article I've cut out the Times, and funny enough, I still have it. And in 2004, David Beckham was in the Times with his longer hair and his highlights.
Yeah.
And the turn of the barbering game was the metrosexual man.
Mm.
That was the time when men started really looking to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And there was lots of publicity around it. So I said, I'm about to open this new brand. It's appointment men's hair. It's never really been done in Liverpool before. I'm going to more than double my price. He said, you can come to the opening. He said, well, if that's true, I'll come to the opening. He said, you're going to be the man. I was like, right, okay. So I went home. I said, Mom, scrap this. We're not moving the shop. I haven't let the lease go. What do you mean? So we're opening a new shop. So I told her, and she was like, because my mum used to run a doctor's practice. So my mum was like my buffer before the accountants.
Yeah.
She was like, Ian, you haven't got any money to do this. You can't furnish it or anything. You're literally taking all the furniture out your barber. Oh, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. So I did. That's what I did. So right now I have two barbershops on one street, three doors apart from each other, looking after two totally different clienteles. And it near ruined me. I was nearly ruined before I was 30, because I had these two leases, the lease that I'd re-signed so that my landlord didn't get twitchy in the shop that did really well. That had four lads cutting hair in it every day, massive queues, and then me sitting behind the reception desk twiddling my thumbs for 8 hours a day for probably the first 2 years.
Wow.
Did the clients from Traditions come over to
Day I turned up to work, and being in the city that I'm from, it's a nice little fishing village called Liverpool. But one day I turned up and somebody decked all my car. Thought it was appalling that I'd walked out of my barber's and left. I still owned it, still ran exactly the same way, but who was I? You know, I've gone over the road, more than doubled my price. Thought it was disgusting. Gone out, my car was all covered in eggs.
What?
So it wasn't an easy thing to do, to be involved in that change. But yeah. I wanted to become an educational hairdresser.
Mm.
And this was my way of doing it. Yeah. And touch wood, I think it's paid off.
Yeah. But you, since you say it, so yeah, if we're saying, you know, 2005 to 2010, the kind of changes were happening in men's grooming, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, you think certainly kind of, I guess the kind of refinery opening up in Harrods was a biggie, that you suddenly had this very different change of pace, that there were kind of, I guess it took that first step of like the Beckham, this kind of very, very high end was the first place. with like Refinery, and there were, mm-hmm. there were several others like that. But it really did sort of kind of ricochet out, and you saw men who'd been certainly getting reasonably dodgy haircuts from kind of chain salons were suddenly looking for somewhere new. And that seems to have been, you know, in my experience, that's where my original customers came from. They were fed up with paying hair salon prices for a haircut that wasn't good enough. And whereas my barbers were doing great work, that was the changeover.
Yeah, it was that crossover. Because I think the word barber was a bit of a dirty word.
It really used to be. I mean, that's the hard thing to say now.
I used to
say
it's hairdressing for men, things like
that.
Yeah,
20 years ago, it really was. You kind of saw it as a real spit and sawdust, kind of shave your head and you get what you're given and that's your lot.
Well, Attitude, the original one on Rose Lane, different when we moved into Topman, because Topman became Attitude Men's Hair. But the sign of Attitude, it just says Attitude. When the shutters are down, you don't know what it is. Because it doesn't say barbershop. Certainly it doesn't say barbershop. It doesn't say hairdressers, because I never quite knew when I opened how to finish it off.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to be a barber anymore. Mm. Not that I was kind of...
It wasn't a shave. It was just the kind of image it gave
people
out.
Just it was
the clientele I was trying to attract. Mm. And that's why I now definitely can prove there's two types of guy that walk down one road, because I've got two very successful stores that do that. And now one of the things I liked about it was that when I come to look at an area now to open another one, I'm like, what do I put there? Mm. What's suited? Is it a more classic barbershop or is it an Attitude?
Yeah.
And so that gives me and all the guys are taught exactly the same way.
Yeah.
It's not like they're taught any different. And one's got a higher skill set than the other, because they haven't.
No.
They could both quite easily work either side of the road. That said, I don't let that happen.
Mm.
I try not to let Attitude's clients know that we own it.
Yeah. No, that's interesting.
It's
about that perception, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you came the other way. You're a hairdresser.
Yeah, hairdressing for six years.
You did your haircut in between a head of foils and then back for a blow dry and all that malarkey.
That was the end of that for me. That was too stressful.
So you made the change at the point of kind of men's grooming changing.
Yeah, I had barbering probably in 97, I think I started in here. And like this shop was appointments, it was... You know, I think it was like half hour, 40 minutes. So it's kind of similar to what is going on now in this shop. It obviously wasn't online bookings. It was all appointments and that. So it still was kind of similar to like the hairdressing world that I'd been used to as far as like your day-to-day stuff. I had it more like when I left here and opened in Canterbury, because I decided, again, just because I just needed people in the chair, I need money. I started to do walk-ins when I opened in Canterbury, which I'd never ever done before in my life. And that was a rocket up the backside when you had like 20 people sat there. And I'm not the quickest in vouch for that. I'm not the quickest
at cutting hair. I mean, we're all appointment, but I still miss it. When we first opened, we had benches and heaters and everything outside that they just couldn't cope with the queues.
Yeah.
And it was lovely. I'd still miss that kind of queue up of people sitting, waiting, reading the paper. And we'd have guys that would get upset that they'd come down, settle down to read the paper quietly, and they've only waited 10 minutes and they're in. It's like, and that almost disappointment, which is gone. I think there's still an element of walking for some business types, but certainly gone for mine.
Well, we have Attitude that's appointment only. It's always been appointment only. And then Traditions is still more or less gone back. Well, it's kind of a hybrid, but I'd say it's a good 80% walk-ins.
Mm.
And that's the customer base.
Yeah.
The customer base hate having to book.
Mm.
And I find it really bizarre, because the team now all have a booking system. But we generally in that store are now back to, as I say, 80% of the business walks back in and sits down like it always has done. Mm. And that's generational. It's... like mum will bring little Ben in to sort of granddad coming in to, it's gone back to, and that environment and that bustle is what I've always missed in attitude.
Yeah.
I've always missed the theatre of that.
Yeah, it was. It definitely felt like you were cutting with an audience.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think that was a great buzz. I do still miss that, I must admit. But you obviously you capture that by getting yourself up on stage. Not something you've embarked on.
I have done it a couple of times. I nearly didn't make the first one due to nearly passing out backstage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was.
Was that illness or nerves?
No, that was nerves.
Just pure nerves.
That was horrible. Didn't really know what was going on, but. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Did you make it up?
I did. I wasn't actually cutting. I was only chatting. There was like three of my guys were cutting. I was just like talking them through it, or meant to be, but it all went a bit pear-shaped literally seconds before I went up. But yeah, and then I have done it a couple of times since, and I think once you get out there and realise it's not the end of the world, it's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoy it. I wouldn't say it's saying I really want to do for it, you know. I don't feel 100% confident up there, you know. I know, like, for me now, like, personally, my role is, like, growing the brand. I'm looking to sort of step away quite a bit from cutting now. I really enjoy trying to grow my team and give them opportunities. I see that's where I'm going in the future. I don't particularly want to go up on stage and cut hair. It's not what I want to do, but I'd love to see some of my guys get up there if you know, and I know some of them are keen to do it, and I'll 100% push for that to be a thing. But yeah, I was not good that first time.
I think that's the really great thing about the industry, and certainly, I mean, you know, mine was a hairdressing background originally, and there's always been those opportunities to get involved. And so when barbering came, you know, when we then became salon and barber, you know, it's great seeing all the opportunities that are out there, the kind of quality of men's imagery that are coming out now. You know, your collections have been great. You know, the imagery that you see in magazines now are, a lot of them are being produced by barbers rather than just by session hairdressers, if you like. And if you find your niche, then great. Have your guys come with you on stage, or is it you as Ian Harold rather than Attitude?
No, well, I've been on stage on my own, and in the last couple of years, I've had at least one member or two members of my team up with me, albeit that when Modern Barber approached me, they've approached me, and I've just took them because I know that on that stage, there's always three chairs. So I've made it more about us.
Yeah.
But now I'm moving more into trying to be Ian Harold on the business stage. And we've got young Sam Carter coming up, and he's now doing the pods. So in the hope that he's then going to step up. And the offer's there for a bit like Bobby. One of the great things about what I think I've been able to do with my career is I worked in a small village barbershop, and there's a big wide world of hairdressing out there. I now try and I have these opportunities. So I now try and pass those opportunities on because they weren't available to me. Had they have been available to me, I may have still worked for the company that I work for.
Yeah.
And I think we talked briefly about sort of barbering changing in the early 2000s. I think barbering as an industry more than catapulted with the arrival of Instagram and social media. I think that then really helped shift the bar. Whether you dial into it or you don't, I do think that that's where, as an industry, good or bad, we've definitely found our voice.
Definitely. I think that's probably bringing us to the end of part one. Great stuff, boys. Thank you very much. Yes, Ian and I will be chatting at Barber Connect on the Barber Connect business stage. Hopefully, my nerves will hold up because I'm on there for, I think I've got an 8-hour shift of 2 days running. So you're definitely going to hear enough of me if I'm not passed out backstage. I've really enjoyed that. Thank you very much. We've been the Noble Barber Podcast. See you for part two.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.